welcome to the Daytime Confidential podcast, brought to you by DaytimeConfidential.com. On today's show, we're counting down our top five black soap opera characters. Stay tuned. Joshua Baldwin, welcome.
Hello, hello, hello.
Carly Silver, welcome.
Good morning.
Well, we are counting down a top five black soap opera characters. Mike is traveling. Jillian doesn't really care for top fives just in general, so she tends to skip them regardless of the topic. So it's just the three of us. But I thought it would be a fun topic for Black History Month to have a top five episode. And we haven't had a top five in a while. And everybody knows I love my top fives.
How many ties do you have? Can I ask?
I don't actually have any ties, but that may be because of the... Josh and I were sort of talking about this a little bit before the podcast, but this episode sort of makes you realize how Daytime has a long way to go to get proper representation. Before we start this, I sort of want to give a heads up, because longtime listeners will know that I am not a, or I start, like, I love All My Children. All My Children and Days of Our Lives are my soaps. So you would think that Angie and Jesse would be on this list, at least mine. They're not. I started watching All My Children after their epic story, the primary story. So my first introduction to them as a couple was them reuniting on the train station amongst the mist, which in of itself was beautiful. It was gripping. But the subsequent stories that were told for those characters in the time that All My Children remained on the air was not something that would help catapult any of those characters into
my top five. You weren't captivated when Angie went blind and then Jesse stole someone else's baby when their baby died? That wasn't really riveting storyline for you?
No.
Oh, so, it physically hurts. It's physically painful.
I do have an honorable mention from All My Children, but we'll get to that at the end. So let's kick things.
There wouldn't be a top five if there wasn't like an asterisk or five.
Right. Carly, let's have you kick us off with number five. Who is your number five pick?
So I just like to preface by saying, similarly to Luke, I grew up in watching CBS soaps. And so my knowledge of All My Children and One Life to Live, I really only watched from like the mid-aughts on. And then we didn't really watch Guiding Light or As the World Turns. So those soaps, I'm going with the characters that have really resonated with me in the shows that I grew up watching and have been watching regularly since. So with that in mind, number five on my list is Layla Williamson on One Life to Live. I started watching One Life, I think, around the time after Evangeline was in a coma. And I remember immediately being really engaged. Like, I think it was after the time when Evangeline, like after the creepy serial killer, but like when the characters were starting to like reform new relationships. And I really loved the push and pull between Layla and Christian, played by David Fumero. I thought they were hot. They were fun. They were, you know, there was this awkward thing because, you know, as I tried to do some background reading, I kept getting Soap Opera Digest from the grocery checkout. You know, I learned that her sister had been involved with him and there was this whole, you know, back and forth, but they were roommates and they were just really flirty and sexy, but there was this undercurrent of real drama and passion there. And even though they, and then of course she was involved with Fish, who then ended up being gay. And there was the whole Kyle and Fish storyline, which was really engaging. But I really liked the way Layla was written. She was smart. She was a good friend. She really loved her family. And even though she was like the rebel daughter when she came in, she ended up, you know, Tika Sumter did such an amazing job with the character. It's no surprise to me that she's gone on to be a real superstar. And I think she's now like in Sonic the Hedgehog movies. And she was, you know, she's had innumerable TV roles and she's just a star. So that for me is my number five.
Josh, who do you have?
My number five is from As the World Turns. It's Tamara Tooney as Jessica Griffin.
Oh, this is good. I'm glad you picked her, because I didn't, but I will be mentioning her.
Similarly to Luke, I came to certain soaps later, and I only started watching CBS soaps after Another World was canceled.
Same.
And so when I flipped over to As the World Turns, quite literally the Monday after Friday's final hideous episode of Another World.
Because Jake was going to Oakdale.
Jake, Vicky, and they brought Donna over. Oh, yeah, so good.
Cass popped up a couple times, and Lila popped up. I love me some Lila.
You love some Lila, which is going to be controversial because folks didn't like Lila because Frankie had been beaten a fool, and they didn't
she
like
was
Lila.
The one who killed, because Frankie, I know, is the one that died.
Frankie's the one that got, that was to this day the single most violent soap death I've ever seen. But when I came over to As the World Turns, I have a thing where my characters don't always have to be like the most front burner characters. I have to feel good about them. And whenever Jessica Griffin would come on my screen, I would just zone in on her. I love Tamara Tooney. I loved her portrayal of that attorney. And I love attorneys are some of my favorite characters on these shows anyway. She was in and out of story, but for a lot of it, she was just sort of the local attorney. But Jessica Griffin was one of my introductory characters that I absolutely adored on As the World Turns. So she is my number five.
So coming in at number five for me is someone also from As the World Turns, and it's Jessica's daughter, Bonnie McKechnie.
Yes. Okay, I'm with you.
So as portrayed by Napira Groves, I also came over to As the World Turns after Another World went off the air. I love Jessica, but listen, there are just some things that I love in soap storytelling. A good corporate storyline, some old matriarchs or patriarchs manipulating people, and a story that involves some sort of noble title. And so Bonnie becoming a duchess or whatever it was hooked me, and I was there for it. I loved Grove's portrayal. I loved how the characters played out. She went on an adventure. There were Scottish accents involved. It just worked for me on a whole bunch of levels. I was happy. Well, maybe they weren't Scottish. Maybe they were English. I'm trying to remember that.
That's like the type of thing that I would really love. And I'm going to have to see if I can go find some clips because that, I mean, anyone who knows me knows I'm a sucker for something, for anything, you know, English or Scottish. But that's so classic soap. And I'm, as a romance editor, I love a good Duke. You really can't do
right
day in, day out without loving a good Duke or Duchess.
The only thing better than a good Duke or Duchess is a Dowager or a Grand Duke. That's the only thing that beats them.
Okay, you know what? We need to have like a sassy octogenarian duchess romance for you, Luke. You would write the
Listen, if someone like the Dowager Countess of Downton Abbey arrived in one of our soap opera cities, I would not be complaining at all. And there's plenty of talented old broads who could portray the character and eat up some amazing scenery. I would love it.
Luke loves a talented old broad.
Don't we all?
It's very true. It's very true. A snipey grand. You must be loving Gilded Age then.
Oh, I am in heaven with Gilded Age. Like Gilded Age.
That was written for you, Luke.
it really was. And I want to give a shout out to Grant, who is behind the Gilded Age podcast. He's a longtime listener of the show. So I want to give a shout out to him because watching the show and then seeing what he's doing with that podcast is quite wonderful. So shout out to him as an aside on this topic. Coming in at number four, who do you have, Josh?
My number four, again, same sort of theme here. Olivia Barber Hastings Winters on The Young and the Restless.
Interesting. I knew there would be Winters on here. I didn't think Olivia would, but that's interesting.
Olivia's such an underrated character.
Yes, I agree.
I'm with you on that. When I came over again, didn't start CBS soaps, and I think Luke, you're similar here, is that I found Young and the Restless painfully slow. when I first started watching it. It was good. It just was very, very slow. But then I got into it, so I didn't decided to go back and watch clips. And that's really where I fell in love with Olivia. Tanya Lee Williams, or Tanya Williams, however, I'm not sure if she goes by both. But she, the warmth, the I bought her. She was a good, she and Drusilla together, I liked, but they were good. They were good, different sides of the coin. Where Olivia was the doctor and she was stable, and even more modern day, I think she took care of Lily when Lily had her cancer stuff go on.
Yes.
And that was, there are stories at the time. I remember thinking that I didn't necessarily love that story, but now looking back on it, that was freaking gold compared to what we're getting now.
I know. It's unbelievable.
And she's also a character that is so painfully missed on the show right now. They do not know what to do with Nate through two iterations. They just don't know what to do with him. His mama needs to be on that show. Olivia needs to be there to bring the hospital more into things and to give Nate a direction and to drive her own story. She brings warmth to the screen. She's one of the reasons I kept with Young and the Restless, because I just, again, was drawn to the screen when she was on. I felt, how to say this, sort of just warm inside. It just gave me warm feelings, Olivia. So she is my number four.
Well, if we're honest, well, two things. First of all, I agree. Back in the day, The Young and the Restless was slow, but it was good.
Oh, yeah.
Compared to today,
you have to stick with it.
Compared to today, where it's slow and you're like, what the fuck?
It was slowly, at least in the back in the day, it was slowly moving towards the
Well, and it built. Yeah, it
and we
built.
Didn't realize what we
it
had.
It built.
It was like Lego building blocks. The storyline's built. Nothing is built currently. The other point that I would point out is the African-American characters on The Young and the Restless, for the most part, languish for the last, say, 5 years. There's exceptions. We don't see, at least from my perspective, the integration in the important storylines that the previous eras received. Today's characters just seem to be cordoned off in their own areas a lot of times. Not all. But they then don't get very good storylines either. So there's not really great integration, and the storylines they get aren't great either. That's how I feel about it. But
oh yeah, I'm with you. I totally agree.
You know, it's interesting, in preparation for this podcast, I went back and started doing some research of some of my favorite scenes from the characters that I would choose. And without spoiling who I'm going to choose, I was watching some of Tanya Lee Williams's scenes. And I think it's so easy for a character that is quote unquote good, or like the kind, or the comp, you know, the she and Drusilla were foils to one another,
right,
for the sort of the character of Olivia to have been one dimensional, right? Not to say she was written that way, but the way that Tanya Lee Williams portrayed that character, had it been done by, she made Olivia so nuanced when, you know, in the scenes where Olivia finds out about Nathan's affair with Keisha, right? That could have been, you know, caterwauling and screaming and all of this, but this nuanced heartbreak and grief that this character showed for the breakup of her family, that she was, it was like this quiet but beautifully heartbreaking devastation, and it was so, it was so compelling to watch. And I agree that, especially YNR back in the day, it definitely took a little while to get adjusted to sort of the way the show was paced in comparison to other shows. But those little gems of moments really make you realize that, wow, some of these performances were just, you know, not even in just comparison to now, but it were just gold, and really make you realize what a special cast that was, in particular at this time.
Yeah, go back and watch. I mean, if anybody wants to really grasp what we're talking about, you know, I mean, you can find the stories, but you can actually go back and watch the clips from the Emmys from those years, where Tanya Lee Williams and Victoria Rowell were always nominated and shamefully never won. But those clips, and there's, I can't remember what year it is, but Carly, correct me if I'm wrong, but there's this where she finds out about Nate's affair. Doesn't Drew just light into Nate?
I think so. Cause Drew had said, oh, you know, like, you'd better end it with this woman. And she hangs up, like, she pulls the phone away from, from Nathan, and then it turns out that Olivia's, like, a couple days later, Olivia's going to have, like, a date with Nathan, and Nathan has to go out of town on a business trip. Drew calls his office and says, yeah, he told me it was, like, there's something I have to tell you. He told me it was over, but he's having an affair with Keisha. And it was just the most heartbreaking, and I loved that storyline.
Carly, who do you have at number four?
My pick for this would be Neil Winters on The Young and the Restless. Christopher St. John was an incredible performer whose legacy and still felt on the show, and is still, and he as a performer is still sorely missed. Neil was a really interesting, complex character, and he had, you know, the chemistry that super couples are made of with Victoria Rowell. I loved seeing Neil in corporate storylines, in romantic storylines, in, I will always remember that wonderful episode where he, where I believe he sees, you know, he says goodbye to his mom for the last time, who was played by Star Trek legend Nichelle Nichols. And I just, he was such a magnetic character. I always was interested in what Neil was going to do. So Neil is my pick.
Good choice.
Yes, very good choice. Coming in at number four for me is Malcolm Winters.
Actually, which Malcolm?
Touche, Shamar Moore's. My introduction to The Young and the Restless, I don't remember exactly when it was. I know that for CBS, a lot of my CBS viewing started around the time that Another World went off the air, but I had dabbled in The Young and the Restless, like dip my toe in here and there before that. But Shamar Moore on your screen, first of all, he was hot. Second of all, his magnetism and the way that his presence filled any scene that he was in, whether it was in a lab, whether it was him modeling, whether it was him, like, anywhere. He had a presence that when he stepped into the room, you paid attention and you were like, I wonder what's going to happen. And then there was this suaveness to him too that was like, oh, make your heart just go like, okay, I want to see who he's going to be paired with. I want to be able to root for these people. And I'm like, back then, I don't know that we called shipping, but it's like, I want to ship this character and whoever he's paired with. So for me, number four would be Malcolm Winters, played by Shamar Moore on The Young and the Restless.
You know what would have been a great pairing had they explored it? I'll make this brief. Is if they had gone with him, if Malcolm and Phyllis had a spark, because they would have pissed Drusilla off to no end.
Yes. Can you imagine Phyllis?
Oh, they would have been so interesting at the very least.
Yes. Who do you have at number three, Carly?
At number three, this is so hard to choose because I miss this character so dearly. But Hillary Curtis Winters Hamilton.
Oh.
I adored Hillary.
Yes.
After they figured out what they wanted to do with her, because at first she was like the whole scheming with her mother, or the whole mother like trying to avenge her mother was a woman Neil had slept with, but somehow she blamed Neil for the mother's death. I didn't really get how that worked.
Well,
but then she was
was not a good story.
No, it was not. But I remember she was coming onto Kane to break up Lily and Kane, and that's when I started liking her, because I was never a big Lily and Kane fan, and I was like, okay, this character is obviously a bit scheming, and that's really interesting. And then she and Neil got involved, and I was like, okay, I thought that they had chemistry. But Hillary and Devon first started butting heads, you could tell there was something really special between those two actors and then the characters. They were seemingly polar opposites. Hillary was a bit of, you know, a social climber. She really wanted, you know, to, you know, she had an ego and wasn't afraid to embrace that. She was like, I am who I am, and so what? You know, love it or hate it. And that type of unabashed just joy in like a character embracing themselves, and that type of like, in, you know, sort of a certain degree of brashness and a certain degree of just amazing confidence while also being a little bit abrasive and but also very vulnerable, is really hard to balance. And Michelle Morgan balanced that with flair, and then you get her with Devon, and that triangle before the really weird plane reveal was one of my favorites. I think I've had, it's probably my favorite triangle that soaps have had in the past decade or so. It was so engaging because you really felt for Hillary, and you felt for Devon, especially because we'd seen Devon and Neil's relationship evolve, you know, from the time Devon was a foster kid who didn't have anywhere to go to him really being embraced by, you know, adopted by Drew and Neil and Lily. And, you know, I just, you knew that you really felt that the last thing Devon actually wanted was to break his dad's heart, but the love felt real.
He wanted to break Hillary's back more than he wanted to, break.
And that was the thing, because you felt both of those emotions.
Yeah, absolutely.
The wedding and then the subsequent kidnap thing was really weird. I mean, not the wedding was lovely. The kidnap thing was weird.
Oh, very strange.
I also thought that the way that Devon breaking up with Hillary because she tripped Mariah, or not Mariah. Yes, Mariah.
Mariah.
Was, I was going to say Cassie, but it was Mariah. Was so flimsy. You know, they could have been the new Black Chancellors. And I think,
yeah, should have been.
You know, they should have been. And Hillary was just, she was such a really multifaceted character. And that I liked when they were getting back together. But then, of course, the big thing is that when she was killed off as a quote unquote gift, which I don't think any of us buys.
Oh, Lord,
and
that gift.
Also, what's interesting, though, is that the repercussions of not just her death, but the fact that their child died with her is still felt today when we're going through this Dominic storyline. Because for better or for worse, you know, Devon, the whole reason Devon and Lily were pitted against each other was because Devon was grieving a lot. Like, Lily ultimately caused the death of his wife and child. Mm-hmm. And so that's one of the things that's made it's not so much that I think the show is taking into account. The fans are like, we remember when Devon would have given anything to have a baby of his own, you know, that is because he had a child on the way that died. So this idea that he's so willing to give up this baby is not in keeping with what we know of the character. So I think, anyway, I like Amanda. I still miss Hillary because I think that type of, you know, we have a couple schemers on the canvas, but I don't think any of them are necessarily as portrayed as nuanced or are written as in as nuanced or as interesting a way with such a, you know, a different, you know, interesting backstory or different love triangles the way Hillary was. So for me, it's Hillary, Curtis, Winters, Hamilton at number three.
Josh, who do you have?
Yes, sir. I have a deep cut here, okay? My number three is a character that probably very few people are going to remember because it was so long ago, but her name was Quinn Harding on Another World.
No clue.
Petronia Paley, I believe, is her name. This was early 80s, and the reason I bring her up is because I was like, I don't know, I was like eight or something like that. I had just started, like my mom said, we play all day, but from 12 to 2, we watch Days of Our Lives in Another World. So I would come in and we watch Another World. And Quinn was the first professional businesswoman of color that I remember seeing on a soap opera. I'm not saying she was the first. I'm saying she's the first I remember. She didn't always have major storyline, but she was a together character. She was mostly supporting. And is probably remembered most for her murder because she was part of a storyline where there was a serial killer and I remember like it was yesterday, she walked to her car and there was the serial killer storyline was a person was clipping magazines and putting people's names that were going to be murdered next. And Quinn was one of the people that they killed off, which I hated, but it was a good storyline. But she was just the first person of color I saw on my screen that wasn't being portrayed in a stereotypical way. And she sticks with me to this day. So Petronia Paley as Quinn Harding on Another World is my number three.
Coming in at number three for me is a newer character to Days of Our Lives viewers. I'm going with Paulina Price, portrayed by Jackie Harry, because I feel like her introduction – and the story that we have watched played out. I, over the years, have had more than a few rants about new families being introduced to soaps. The Laveries were not happy about them. There are a number, like Sam McCall becoming a Cassadine. I've gotten over it because I love
you
the.
Have not.
I've gotten over it to the extent I could get over it because Alexis.
It's been 15 years.
Because Alexis and Sam have such great mother daughter chemistry, and I like the sister dynamics between Alexis's daughters. So, like, it's still an asterisk for me. But I. So, like, introducing new characters and making them Insta families is not something that I am usually a big fan of. But what Ron and company did at Days of Our Lives with Paulina, how they introduced her. She is a wealthy, powerful, rich woman who has a connection to Salem that we get to explore. The integration was flawless. She has provided Abe with more, well, he's gotten more action in the last couple of years and in the past decade. But besides that, it's made Abe, how do I put this?
It's put made the, irrelevant again.
It's put the twinkle back in Abe's eye
it's
as a character.
Vitalize him as a character.
Yes, she has done an amazing job at that. Her scenes with Lonnie are good. They brought in the younger sister. I don't think that would be possible if Jack A was not so good at both the vulnerable and I don't want to say over the top because that's not what I'm looking for, but like the businesswoman, the powerful businesswoman, she can go between those two so well, and you're there with her every moment of that character's journey. It's been quite impressive for me. And I think that this is a character that can be around Salem for decades to come and will be causing all kinds of, well, maybe not necessarily causing, she'll cause some, of course, but she will be involved in all kinds of drama going forward, and I love her. Number two, Josh.
My number two is Tanya Boyd as Celeste Perot or Parol, however you want to say it, on Days of Our Lives. Oh, danger, darling, danger.
Best psychic. Doom, darling. Doom,
Darling. Doom, danger. Ooh, yes. The best psychic that nobody ever believed in daytime. She was right every single time. And she wasn't just a psychic on screen. She was threaded through the Demira storyline and was truly the center of the Salem serial killer storyline, because she had a vision every single time there was a death that was about to happen, and would nobody listen to her. They thought she was. I even remember at the very, very beginning of that storyline that actually started at the Last Blast Dance. Lights go out, lights come back on, Bo has been beaten to a pulp. People are passed out. Nobody really knows what happened. But right before that, she had this vision that something was going to happen at that dance. She had a vision when Abe was going to be killed, and then on through. Key character in storylines, and she is terribly missed on screen. So Tanya Boyd as Celeste on Days of Our Lives, my number two.
Carly, who do you have?
I have Maya Avant Forrester. I think.
Interesting.
Interesting.
Yeah. I'm kind of surprised no one else has had her so far, because although she's a newer character, I think she's one that's been really discussed and delved into in recent years. Her legacy is still felt in one we've discussed. I like, I didn't watch Carla Moseley on As the World on Guiding Light because I didn't watch Guiding Light when it was on. But I remember being like, okay, the way the character was originally written was not particularly compelling. She, you know, it was sort of the, like, the Forresters being the white savior of, you know, the same way they did with Daisy. And it was like, okay, you know, not, the actress was fine, but the role wasn't written in a way that was really original, right? But when they had Maya had a secret, and we were all like, ugh, okay, what is it going to be? No, I even remember that there was one of the podcast episodes, someone was saying, you know, like, what is her secret? Like, because, you know, Bold can really sort of go They either hit it out of the park rails. Or it's like, ugh. Yeah. And it turned out that her secret that she was a trans was that she was a trans woman. We were like, whoa, Bull is going there. And the way they developed this character was nuanced. It was interesting. And we really got to know Maya as a woman who had struggled with her gender identity. We then got her father and mother played so brilliantly by Oba Babatunde and Anna Marie Horsford, her little sister, played by Rainn Edwards, and then her little secret half-sister, played by Felicia Cooper, I think it was.
Yes, oh, but, I miss her. I miss
and I loved the way, you know, this character, it wasn't just, you know, Maya musing to, like talking loud to herself about her experience. We got her little sister, like, you know, she was blackmailing her to stay in the mansion. And then we got, you know, this romance with Rick that she had, and people, I'm just trying to find out her secret, but yes, she was a schemer, which we, I mean, in the sense of she was openly ambitious. And I even remember her saying to Caroline, yeah, I want all of the Forster money and it comes with it. So what, like, what about it? Yes, exactly. I love Rick, but, and that she was embracing, you know, everything that, but she also was a deeply, a character with a lot of things to work through. And also, you know, again, and then the scenes that really broke my heart, and I always remember, is when Maya and Rick are getting married at the hip. And Maya's looks beautiful, is about to come downstairs in her dress. And she, and Julius, her father, has been seemingly accepting her once he realizes all of the luxury and all the way the Foresters are accepting her. And he dead names her, and I believe he does at that point. And then he also, you know, says that she's never going to be his daughter, that she's always going to be his son. And it just, that confrontation scene was so devastating, and every actor gave it their all.
Absolutely.
And I was so just, I think it was Jamie who christened her the Black Erica Kane. And I was just so excited for the future of the character. And I think that after that, they didn't know what to do with her, it seemed to me.
Because so they did nothing.
Okay, they've had her talk about her gender identity, and then they made her want a baby, which is fine. But the way that Maya sort of pressured Nicole into it, like, the second time, and I got the impetus of it, but the way Maya was pressuring Nicole didn't really, like, seem, it seemed to be like the baby became Maya's sole focus, when that was never the character of Maya. Was always like, yes, she was there for Rick, but she was also a model. Remember when everyone at the first wanted to be the lead model, and then she was also
wants to have their portrait above the thing.
Exactly. with the Forrester Matrix, they always go, you know, it just seemed like Maya as a character sort of lost some of her focus that became all about the baby, which I think was the way the character was written. And then she and Rick were then they had their baby Lizzie, which was lovely. And then they went to Forrester International, and we saw them again briefly when it was revealed they were divorced, and that's it. And it was such a dismal ending for such an interesting character. And I think there's not a single person that I remember she and Brooke were standing in the Forrester living room. I think it was the Logan family living room. And it was just like, oh yeah, we grew apart and it was sad. And I was like, are you serious?
Yep.
We have invested so much in this character. We care so much about this character. And, you know, I don't, you know, and also what really gets my goat is that Bold got all this, you know, acclaim for doing a trans story, you know, for writing a you know, trans female heroine, which was great. And then they just dropped it. Like, the character didn't matter anymore. And I'm not saying that they have to have this character on every day, every, you know, because that's no characters on every day on a 15-20 minute soap. But I think that it seemed like they weren't interested in continuing to write for the character. That's supposition. I don't know anything. But it was an injustice to the character and the character's fan base, and what the many, many interesting and nuanced stories that could continue to be told about this character and by a very good actress in the role. So I think, anyway, I will always, that storyline will always be one of my favorites on Bold. And to me, that was the last time the show was compelling. And that was probably about 6 or 7 years ago.
That's true.
So at number 3, I'm sorry, number two is Maya.
Josh, who do you have? Coming in at number two for me is someone from The Young and the Restless, Drusilla Winters. I had to have her on my list. It was just the question of will she be one or two, number one or two? And then I remembered a character prior to the podcast, and I was like, okay, she's going to have to be number two because my love for number one is up there. Victoria Rowell did such an amazing job as Drusilla. I didn't catch her early years, but I caught enough of the Winters era. Opposite of Phyllis and versus Drusilla was one of my favorite soap rivalries, keeping in mind that I grew up, like, the first soaps that I remember are Another World and Days of Our Lives. And then when I was on my own, I got hooked on All My Children and General Hospital. So the CBS soaps were never the soaps where I gravitated to. But for me, Drusilla versus Phyllis was as epic a rivalry as Brooke versus Erica, or Vicky versus Dorian, or Kate versus Sammy. I love them. It was fantastic. I watched for that rivalry. And then you had her with Neil, and it was flawless. The things that their relationship went through, is like, boy, some of that stuff was rough, but just watching them come through it. How do I put this? A lot of times on soaps, you'll have a family, and the way that the family is depicted is logical in terms of soap logic, and it makes sense in terms of soap logic, so you ignore a lot of the stuff that doesn't feel like natural or real about the family. But every once in a while, you'll just get a soap family where you feel like you're a fly on the wall of a real person's home. And that was Drusilla and Neil's relationship. I loved it. I thought that they were amazing together. I was so happy that Victoria came back after Christoph passed away for the memorial episode, honoring him. I thought that that was really well done. And it was a testament to what they as a couple created for that show. And I can't think of The Young and the Restless without thinking of Drusilla. I mean, Victor Newman, Nikki, Jack, and Drusilla.
Sent her screaming over that cliff.
Right. Mm. I was trying to ignore that part.
In my head, I'm still
holding out hope that someday, no way, like, I don't, how do I put this? The soap podcaster blogger in me realizes that the chances are slim, but the soap fan in me is like, there's a glimmer. I have to hold on to a glimmer.
Crazy Dr. Tad Martin got her some cabin at the bottom of that cliff.
Right, like, right.
I'm sorry, you mean Dr. Foghorn Leghorn?
whoever brought Latin Jack, whoever saved Latin Jack.
No, not Marco Innocent.
Number one, Josh, who do you have?
Oh, y'all remember, a lot of this is based on the shows that I watched. My number one is Renee Jones as Alexandra Brooks Demera Carver on Days of Our Lives. There is no single character in daytime that I miss more than Lexi. I loved this character because she was messy. She was, wait.
But it wasn't just messy. She was messy in a doctor's coat. So she had the veneer of propriety, but she was messy beneath it.
She started out on the police force, and then she switched to being a doctor in 14 seconds, which happens. But she was a nuanced character. She was good for the most part, but her libido got her into trouble. She sniffed around Abe's brother, Jonah. She had an affair with Abe's son, Brandon. There was this guy named Tech that she slept with as well. She was always messing around. She was always messing around on Abe. But the character to me really took off when Lexi discovered she was a Dimera and she had to tussle with the tug of war in her head. And it came to a head when Lexi was pregnant and she lost her baby. And Stefano and Andre stepped in, kidnapped baby Zach that was Bo and Hope's child, from the hospital. And they pretended that that child was Isaac, and Lexi raised her. Then they got this other couple who
it's like wanted, Dr. Rolf's niece's baby or something, right?
Something like that. Yeah. This couple, I think that the baby's name was actually JT.
But yeah. John Thomas. I remember
Yeah. And then Hope had this baby, and then they thought Hope's baby died. It was all kind of a big mess, but Lexi kept that baby and embraced her Dimera side. And then everybody found out and was just horrified because they would have never expected Lexi to do this. She had battles with Sammy because they both sniffed around Brandon all the
Lexi
time.
Lexi versus Sammy was good. So
those were some of my favorite Lexi scenes. I remember, so I was going back and watching stuff in preparation for today. And when Sammy was blackmailing her in that hospital,
yep. Oh,
and not only that, do you remember when Celeste would come with Lexi to the apartment? She was, darling, I'll wait outside. And then Lexi, you know, takes off her fur coat and goes, Sammy, how dare you? And I was like, you don't deserve Brandon. And it was such good soap.
Lexi lied to Carrie. That's what Sammy blackmailed Lexi. And had her lie to Carrie about her chances of having.
Oh yeah, and that kept Carrie with Lucas. Oh, yep. That was so good. I'm sorry, but was that the time when? It was the scene with the lie that Carrie couldn't carry the baby.
Yep, absolutely.
Oh gosh, so good.
See, what I loved about Lexi was everything about Lexi versus Sammy, because of course that was one of those things where I'm cheering them both. It wasn't necessarily.
Oh yeah.
Lexi versus Sammy was sort of like Lexi versus Nicole later on, where you're cheering for both of them, even though obviously Sammy's my favorite. But what I loved about Lexi was her interactions with Stefano, because Stefano was one of my all time favorite villains. And the way that those two interacted as father and daughter was wonderful.
Oh, yeah. And I think that, you know, they had her be chief of staff. She went up against Carly to be chief of staff. And then at some point prior to that, I think Andre kidnapped her because she thought Andre shot EJ or something to that effect. But that kidnapping, I believe, is actually 5 years later what resulted in the brain tumor death, that she had been held in those tunnels and there was some toxic something or other.
Yeah.
And it caused her death. And I respectfully to Renee Jones, I think that I hope that she is living her best life. And I don't want anybody to come back to something they don't want to do. But I just, this character, particularly right now, how messy would it be if Lexi was the first person Dr. Rolf tested that injection on, and she's actually been, I mean, you bring her, I mean, they're not going to, and that's fine, but how messy would that be? With
this
Paulina
is what you call Josh's wishful soap.
Oh, it's so wishful
storytelling.
You know, I'm curious, because that's an interesting idea, and if the actress would not be willing to come back, would you, like, if you were in charge, would you recast, and if so?
No.
It would be so hard. It's hard for me to.
No, you cannot recast that character. Mm-mm.
This is one of the, I mean, I think pretty much every character is recastable, but this is one of those times.
Erica Kane, Victor Newman, Sammy Brady, Marlena cannot be recast.
Right, I agree.
Laura Weber cannot be recast.
I agree with that.
But
for the most.
Correct. But like Lexi as a character, like she wouldn't be one of those ones that you would think would be an obvious, you can't recast her. But how do I put this? I think that in the minds of those who loved Lexi,
Yeah.
In a way, it's almost become like there's a shrine to Lexi because we imagine what she would be like if she were still alive today.
Yep.
And that shrine is specifically to Renee's portrayal of the character.
Yeah, it's hard to pull them apart.
Right. Yeah, I don't think you could recast, like...
I mean, I think she's recast. Well, I'd be fine with it, whatever. When I think about Lexi, it's hard for me to pull apart how much I love Renee Jones and how much I love Lexi and
that's
figure out where
point.
That balance is. But that's my number one.
I'll put it this way. It's not impossible to recast Lexi, but you would have to find a damn talented actress to do
Agreed.
It.
Agreed.
I mean, and I wasn't suggesting that they should. I was just more as a hypothetical.
No, sure. I hear you.
Yeah. Carly, who do you have at number one?
For me, there was only one option. Drusilla Barber Winters. I started watching Y&R around the mid-aughts, and Drusilla sprang off my screen as a character that's fully formed in every way. And I think while the character was obviously created and written well, it was, to me, she resonated largely largely because of Victoria Rowell's portrayal. That actress brought a character to life with such I feel like she thought about every aspect of who Drusilla was as a person. And, you know, sometimes it's, and obviously it was a great combo of the writing and acting, as we've later found out Victoria had some input on certain storylines and certain, you know, collaborated with Bill Bell, as she's talked about. But Drusilla felt to me like a real woman. And I can't say that for a lot of for every soap character, whether it's because they're back from the dead or because, you know, there were things that, like, I later found out, like, oh, Drusilla somehow didn't know how to read when her sister grew up and became a doctor. Like, that didn't really, that was obviously a particular portrayal choice that didn't really plot-wise make a lot of sense, but you understood her animosity towards Olivia for being her parents' favorite daughter. You understood her love for her Aunt Mamie. You understood her love for Neil. And, you know, one of the things, I think, to me, Drusilla and Neil were one of the most underappreciated, when you think of the phrase super couple, right?
Sure.
To me, they had just as many highs and lows and, you know, splits and everything as Nick and Sharon. Although I don't really think, other than Malcolm, which that one, the drugged sex thing, which is a whole nother issue.
Yeah.
And Drusilla arguably was not, you know, able to consent. She was never really given another, like, love interest outside of that. And it would have been interesting, like, just to even see, even if she ended up with Neil, to see who else the actress had chemistry with, because she was such a dynamic performer. But I think that even with everything she had from her bond with Olivia, which started out hate-wise and ended up really being this amazing sisterly bond, to her really, you know, her wanting to be a model. And Neil essentially making her really choose, and the heartbreak when she left Lily behind. Again, I've since gone back and watched a lot of this that I missed in the 90s, and, you know, her later return. And I loved her friendship with Sharon.
I
loved that they were these sort of, I wouldn't even say outcasts, but they were these two women who neither of whom had really, like, close female friendships. And that's the thing that I think, as we've talked about, soaps can often overlook in their portrayal of a character, is like giving girls girlfriends, like the way you'd have, you know. And I think their friendship, when they both, like, when Sharon went through her divorce and when Drusilla was going through it with Carmen and everything like that, they were really there for each other. And it ended up being that Drusilla ended up giving her life for Sharon, and that last scene was such a disservice to the character and the way that they wrote her up. But, you know, I didn't appreciate that. But to me, what really resonated was the way Drusilla fought for her children and for the man she loved. There was literally nothing she would not do for Lily or for Devon or for Neil. And one of my favorite scenes, it's such a zany scene, but is when, you know, Drusilla Carmen is sort of, is get, and she had like a cousin Inez, remember, remember who was her lookalike, who David Chow brought back.
Oh, yeah.
I, which was wacky.
Let's not talk about David Chow.
No, but I remember what that brought about was Drusilla goes to Carmen's suite in the athletic club, right? It's before Phyllis tore up Sharon's clothes. And she just took a scissor and just ripped up everything Carmen owned. And I remember, and yes, it was very, like, it was very soapy, but I could feel this character's anguish at that, what, her entire world was falling apart and she felt, like, abandoned. And it was so, it was just so well done. And I think that the actresses, the characters also have been endeared to me, especially as we've learned more about the actress's own fight for diversity in front of and behind the camera, and also continuing to see all the amazing work she's done with Secrets of a Soap Opera Diva, Rich and the Ruthless, directing, acting, and being an advocate for children in foster care. And I think she's somebody who is really passionate about the causes she believes in. And that really came across to me on screen. And I will forever and forever miss Drusilla. And that is to, we're talking about Renee Jones. To me, Drusilla is a character who I don't think could ever be really recast, at least especially at this point when, you know, it's been like 15 years. But I just, she will forever be one of my favorite soap characters. So cheers to Victoria Rowell and her amazing portrayal of Drusilla. I will always miss that character.
Coming in at number one for me is someone who Josh mentioned. It is Celeste, Days of Our Lives.
Oh, yes.
When I think of old school Days of Our Lives and what drew me to this show, well, obviously there's Sammy, as everybody knows. There's Kate, there's Vivian, and there is Celeste. Those four, for me as a child, and as I grew up watching or reading the recaps, because there was a period when I was away at boarding school where I didn't have access to TV, so I was like logging on, and back then it was like Dustin's Days page, and I was reading the recaps on there on like my break between classes in the computer room. And so Celeste is one of my all-time favorite Days of Our Lives characters. I loved her as a psychic. I loved her as Lexi's mom. I loved her interactions with Stefano, because there were times when you could see that, like, at one point they had, like, you could see the chemistry between them, but in the era in which I remember Celeste and Stefano, it always came across like Stefano loved her but was annoyed by her at the same time.
Agreed.
And that dynamic was provided so much subtext to how she interacted with the rest of Salem, because she was this character who could go from one in one scene having like totally legitimate conversations about things with Abe or Marlena or whatever, and then all of a sudden she could be talking voodoo to Stefano, and Stefano would be looking at her and he'd be like, well, and of course I can't depict that expression on a podcast that's audio.
I'm imagining.
Yes. Right. But I love their dynamic. I love this character. My favorite, I mean, the fact that Jamie and his impersonation of her, of the character, has become sort of a iconic moment on this podcast is a tribute to what an amazing character this was. I miss that character so much. I wish that we could, that it could be back, but I understand why not. Who has honorable mentions? Carly, you first.
My honorable mention is Eli and Lonnie on Days of Our Lives. They've gone through a whole lot of ups and downs that I think a super couple in train, like, you know, in the wings will go through. I think that the two actors have really good chemistry. They've got a history together. They've got a young family. And the fact that they were the first, I believe, Black couple married on screen on Days of Our Lives was historic and long overdue. And I hope that they continue to be front burner for a long time.
Agreed.
Any others for you?
For me, I would have to say Devon in his court, whenever he really gets his teeth sunk into a corporate storyline. There are a couple times of Devon and the Young and the Restless. I think a lot of times Devon is not really written the way we would like to see the character be written, as Catherine Chancellor's grandson, as Neil Winters' son, with somebody with, you know, a lot of heft in in Genoa City, but I will never forget the scene where he finds out that Lily was the one who had caused the accident that killed his wife and child. And Brighton James is a very capable actor. And I think that there's a lot that could be explored with that character's legacy that I would like to see more of.
Okay. Josh, honorable mentions?
Honorable mentions. I will start off with Drusilla. Not that she is an honorable mention. She should be on the list. I just didn't watch as much when she was front burner, and I didn't feel capable of presenting it, but I wanted to mention her. Jesse and
Angie. Carly did a much better job at summarizing Drusilla than I did, so we'll give kudos to Carly.
Kudos, yes. Jesse and Angie from All My Children. I would say the entire Price and Carver families on Days of Our Lives. And when you mentioned Maya, Carly, it made me think, I used to say this, that I used to call it All My Avants. All My Avants, yes, was my favorite iteration of Bold and the Beautiful. I loved that family.
I've
I
also got to add Obubba Tunde and Anna Maria Horsford to my honorable mentions for that.
Absolutely. Purpose. And I think all of the Avants, I loved all of them and miss all of them. They are sorely missed on that show. So those were my honorable mentions.
So Lexi, I had a list snafu. Lexi was supposed to be on my list in the top five, and then I inadvertently used an older list. So Lexi is on my honorable mentions. Reggie, Michael B. Jordan on All My Children, loved him as a young actor there. I'd already watched him on the HBO show. All of a sudden, I can't remember the name, but he was on an HBO show where I'd seen him prior to him arriving on All My Children. But I loved him on All My Children. RJ Gannon, One Life to Live.
Oh, yeah.
Suave character. He was very suave. Taggart on General Hospital. Real Andrews. Back in the day when Gia was still on, Gia's also on my list. I loved their brother and sister dynamic. I loved how Taggart stuck it to Sonny. I loved Nicholas and Gia. I loved them so much. So she had to be on my honorable mentions list.
Can I just add in one more? Sydney Michaela, because she's still a young star and is still a growing performer, but so I didn't want to put her on my list when she's only had the chance to, you know, be on our canvas for a short period of time. But my gosh, she has made such an impact on the show and on fans. And I really think, I hope they're going to keep her around because she is just a tremendous young performer.
Agreed.
Absolutely. On that note, we'd encourage you to comment on this episode at daytimeconfidential.com. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/DC Confidential. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/DC Confidential. You can find me on Twitter at Luke_Kerr. Josh is at DrJosh09. And Carly is at Carly A. Silver. We thank you for listening. Until next time, so long.
Bye, y'all.
Bye, everybody.